So this morning we're going to consider a very well-known account from Luke's Gospel. It's the account that's found in Luke chapter 19 and verses 1 to 10, which we read together earlier on. It's the account of this encounter between our Lord Jesus Christ and Zacchaeus. And I'd like us to think about these verses this morning under three headings. Our first heading is an appointment. So in the first part of this account, we have little indication of the significance of this meeting that is going to take place between Jesus and Zacchaeus. As Jesus enters the city of Jericho, in verse 1, there's no indication that he has any particular business there. In fact, Luke tells us he entered Jericho and was passing through. Similarly with Zacchaeus, we're told in verse 3 that he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but we're not told why he was seeking to do that. It's quite probable that he'd heard about Jesus, that he'd heard about his miracles and his teaching. It was more than likely that he would have heard about the healing of the blind beggar that we read about at the end of chapter 18, which had taken place just outside the city of Jericho. The news of this extraordinary event would have travelled fast, and it may well have awakened in Zacchaeus some curiosity, causing him to want to set eyes on this miracle-working rabbi. But I think there was probably more than just curiosity involved with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is clearly determined to see Jesus, isn't he? He's denied that opportunity at first because of his small stature and the crowds who are surrounding Jesus. But he goes to considerable lengths, seeking out a tree, seeking out this tree where he could climb up to gain a good vantage point. And that's rather undignified behaviour for a man like Zacchaeus, this chief tax collector, isn't it? So it seems that there was a genuine desire there, a determination, more than just mere curiosity. And then as Jesus arrives beneath the sycamore tree where Zacchaeus is waiting, it becomes clear that he is not just passing through the city. Jesus knows that Zacchaeus is there. He knows who he is. He has a definite appointment with him. Verse 5. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So Jesus is quite clear. His passing through Jericho and Zacchaeus being there in the sycamore tree, these things are no accident. Jesus has an appointment with Zacchaeus. He must stay at Zacchaeus' house. The word that's translated "must" here indicates a divine necessity. God has a purpose to accomplish in Zacchaeus' life. And that purpose requires that Jesus visits the house of this man. So clearly Zacchaeus is intent on at least seeing Jesus, and he's already shown his determination by climbing up this tree. And then in verse 6 we see his joyful response to Jesus' command to come down so that Jesus might visit his house. And that joyful response indicates, I think, that there's probably some sense of need, some sense that Jesus is able to help him. Yet surely as he comes down and as he welcomes Jesus to his house, he can have very little idea of how far-reaching will be the consequences of this visit. Perhaps today you find yourself in a similar situation to Zacchaeus as he scrambled up the trunk of that sycamore tree. You've read and heard a lot about Jesus, and you're interested, you want to know more. You have an admiration for his moral teaching. You can see the consistency between what he taught and how he lived. Maybe you even have a sense that your own life is not what it should be, and that Jesus is somehow able to help you in that respect. Well, let me encourage you this morning to have that kind of curiosity, that interest in who Jesus is a good thing. But don't be surprised if, as you find out more about Jesus, you discover that he is intent on far more than just satisfying your interest and answering your questions. As we're going to see, Jesus had an appointment with Zacchaeus which completely transformed his life. Could it be that you're here this morning because Jesus has such an appointment with you? That might sound alarming, but don't be alarmed at the prospect. There are many people in this room who have had such an appointment at some time in their lives. Countless Christians down the centuries have had such an appointment. And I can tell you that not one of them has ever regretted it. Indeed, every one of them has had great cause to thank God for it. And secondly, these verses show us a transformation. Transformation. So Jesus' visit to Zacchaeus goes far beyond satisfying the curiosity of this man. It brings about a complete transformation of his life. It turns his whole outlook on its head. Let's think for a moment about how Luke introduces Zacchaeus to us. In verse 2, he tells us, "And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich." So we're told two things about him. He was a chief tax collector and he was rich. He was a man who had been successful in his career. He'd risen through the ranks. Presumably he'd outperformed his fellow tax collectors. And now he'd arrived at this senior position where he was a chief tax collector. The city of Jericho, where Zacchaeus lived, was known in first century Palestine as a centre where tolls were received on trade that took place between Judea on the west side of the Jordan and Perea on the east. And it may well be that Zacchaeus was involved in this lucrative business of collecting taxes from the passing trade. Well, be that as it may, Luke here draws a clear link between the profession of this man as a tax collector and the fact that he was very wealthy. Now, at first glance, there may not seem to be anything very significant about that. But as we look at the rest of the passage, we find that Zacchaeus' wealth, and in particular his attitude towards it, are deeply affected by his encounter with Jesus. In verse 7, those who surround Jesus are deeply disapproving of the fact that Jesus goes to stay with Zacchaeus, goes to visit him at his home. When they saw it, they all grumbled, "He has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." Why was it that they had such a poor view of this man? Why did they regard him as a sinner, as an outcast, someone who was not worthy of Jesus' time and attention? Well, we know from elsewhere in the Gospels that tax collectors were seen as being amongst the lowest of the low by respectable first century Jews. First reason for that was that they were seen as collaborators with the hated Roman occupiers. They collected taxes from their fellow Jews on behalf of the Gentile authorities, so they were seen as those who compromised with the occupying force. But also, many of them were men of low moral principle, and they enriched themselves at the expense of their fellow countrymen. You see, the tax collectors were not actually employed by the Romans. The money that they lived on had to be taken from what they collected in taxes. And as long as the Romans received the revenues that they were due, they were more than happy for these men to collect as much as they wanted and to pocket the difference. Of course, this system was open to massive abuse, and the more successful tax collectors grew very rich on the backs of their neighbours. And it seems that Zacchaeus was no exception to this. Following his encounter with Jesus, he admits that at least some of his wealth has been obtained by dishonest means. Verse 8, "And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." So Zacchaeus' role as a tax collector and his wealth were not neutral matters. They had serious moral implications. Some of the money that sat in Zacchaeus' bank account was not his at all. It had been obtained by callous exploitation of his fellow countrymen. Now, that might have been all right as far as the Roman authorities were concerned. It might have been all perfectly legal in their view. But in this meeting with Jesus, Zacchaeus was facing a higher authority, an authority with altogether different standards. And he has to confess that he falls far short of those standards. But that's not the only moral question to be answered when it comes to Zacchaeus' wealth. The second consequence of his meeting with Jesus, in verse 8, he says, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor." And I think from this we can understand that Zacchaeus' intention from now on is to give half of his possessions away to the poor. But I think it also suggests that up till now, providing for the needy has been very low down on his list of priorities. If a substantial part of his wealth has been obtained by defrauding his fellow citizens, another part of it has been withheld from those around him in need of help. On one hand, he has taken what was not his to take, and on the other hand, he has held on to what he should have used for the relief of others. But following this visit of Jesus to his house, this man's attitude to his wealth has been transformed. Prior to meeting Jesus, money was the most important thing in his life. And to enrich himself, he was prepared to rob his fellow countrymen. And he was intent on accumulating as much for himself as possible, while he callously neglected the needs of those around him. For Zacchaeus, money was his idol. It was the thing that came first in his life. And it was to his large bank balance that he looked for his peace and security. But now things have changed, now that he has met Jesus. Instead of hoarding wealth for himself, his impulse now is to share that wealth with others. And instead of dishonestly enriching himself at the expense of those around him, he is determined to make restitution for all that he has wrongly taken, in line with the requirements of the Old Testament law. He promises that he will restore four times as much as he has wrongly taken. So money and possessions no longer occupy the chief place in Zacchaeus' affections. The place that they once held now belongs to the one whose place it is by right. It belongs to the true and living God. As a Jew, Zacchaeus may once have claimed allegiance to the God of Israel, but his life told a different story. Now things are different. Instead of trusting in his wealth, he trusts in God to supply all of his needs. And so now he is set free to use his wealth as God intended him to use it. And his delight is now found in pleasing God rather than accumulating more for himself. How are we to explain this change? Well, to answer that, we need to look at Jesus' reply to Zacchaeus in verse 9. And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham." That's Jesus' assessment of this transformation that has taken place. He doesn't pat Zacchaeus on the back and commend him for turning over a new leaf. In fact, he doesn't say anything about what Zacchaeus has done or is going to do. He recognizes that this turnaround is a reflection of what has been done for Zacchaeus rather than what Zacchaeus has done. He has been saved. He has been rescued. What has he been saved from? Well, those people who labelled Zacchaeus as a sinner in verse 7, in a sense, were right. They may have done it from wrong motives. They may have been failing to recognise that they too were in that same category. But they correctly identified the problem this man had, the thing that lay at the heart of his idolatry, his deep-seated rebellion against God, his sin. And that rebellion showed itself in his failure to trust God, and it allowed wealth to occupy the place in his heart that God should have had. It showed itself in breaking God's law, taking what wasn't his, and in the hardness of his heart in ignoring the plight of the needy people around him. In meeting with Jesus, Zacchaeus has been brought to see his sin as his biggest problem, and he's been brought to see that only Jesus can deal with it, removing its guilt and delivering him from its controlling power. So this about turn that has taken place in the life of Zacchaeus, that is not the thing that has saved him. We need to be very clear on that. This repentance, this change of mind leading to a change of direction, is a result of the fact that he has been saved. It's interesting that Luke focuses on this aspect of the change that took place in the life of Zacchaeus. No doubt many other things changed in his life when he met Jesus. But this was the most obvious, it was the most conspicuous, given the nature of his past life. But I think Luke also focuses on it because it's of great relevance to everyone who professes to be a Christian. One key piece of evidence that shows that someone has become a Christian is that it transforms their attitude towards money and possessions, and those things cease to occupy the chief place in their hearts. They're no longer what they live for. They're no longer that to which they look for their security. And this shows itself in how they handle their resources. Accumulating wealth is no longer their goal, and so they reject all dishonest means of enriching themselves. And their joy and their confidence in God and their gratitude for salvation is such, they're set free from clinging on to this wealth, and instead they become generous and liberal in using it for his glory and to meet the needs of others. Maybe this morning you like to think of yourself as a Christian, but I want to ask you this question: do you recognize the description of this change? Is this something that has taken place in your life? It may not have been as dramatic as in the case of Zacchaeus, but if you have met with Jesus Christ and if you have known his salvation, then it will be evident in how you view and how you handle your finances. But perhaps you are a Christian. You know that this change has occurred in your life. But at this point, you're conscious that you're not where you should be in this aspect of Christian living. This is something that can happen so subtly, isn't it? Money and possessions take gradually more hold of our affections than once they did. And that's increasingly reflected in our becoming less generous and more self-centered in the use of our finances. Well, the answer to this is not simply to resolve to try harder, to resolve to give more money. Rather, it's to reflect afresh on the grace of God, on the extravagance of that grace. That was what turned Zacchaeus around. And as you reflect on the extravagance of God's grace towards you in Jesus Christ, ask yourself, how should you be using the resources that he has entrusted to you in the light of that grace? And then thirdly, in this account, we see a saving mission, a saving mission. In verse 9, Jesus is addressing Zacchaeus, but it appears that others were present too. Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham." Jesus is referring to Zacchaeus in the third person, suggesting that there were others present listening to his remarks. And I think in particular the words that Jesus uses indicate that he has in mind those who criticized him for going to the house of Zacchaeus on the grounds that this man was a sinner. Those people clearly thought that Jesus shouldn't be interested in the likes of Zacchaeus, people who were outcasts due to their wayward and immoral lives. Presumably those same people thought that Jesus should focus his attention instead on devout, God-fearing Jews, as they thought they were. Well, Jesus shows them how wide of the mark they are, how they've completely failed to understand the purpose of his mission. It is precisely for this reason that Jesus has come, for people like Zacchaeus. Jesus is unequivocal. Salvation has come to this house. This man whom you wrote off as a sinner, this man whom you treated as an outcast, he has been saved. Yes, he is a sinner, but his many sins have been forgiven, and he has been set free. He's been delivered from the enslaving and the controlling power of sin. And the evidence for that is there in the transformed attitude that he has towards his wealth. And what's more, it's entirely appropriate that Jesus should go to Zacchaeus' house and to bring him this good news of salvation. Why is that? Well, since he also is a son of Abraham. Zacchaeus, like those who criticized Jesus, was a Jew. And Jesus came in the first place to bring salvation to the Jews. And Zacchaeus is as entitled to hear that saving message as any other Jew. And if they doubt that, they fail to grasp the whole purpose of Jesus' mission. Jesus has not just come to bring a message of salvation to devout, respectable Jews. He has come for Jews like Zacchaeus, who are far from respectable, who know that they are sinners, who know that they are lost and separated from God because of their rebellion against him. This salvation that Zacchaeus has received is a clear demonstration of the purpose of Jesus' mission, which he sums up in verse 10. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. But I think this description that Jesus uses of Zacchaeus as a son of Abraham is a challenge to his critics at another level. If you look at John chapter 8 and verses 31 to 47, we won't read the whole of that passage, but in it, Jesus is debating with another group of Jewish people, people who make a big play of the fact that they are descended from Abraham. And yet at the same time, these same people were rejecting Jesus and were looking for an opportunity to kill him. In John chapter 8, verse 39, Jesus says these words. They answered him, "Abraham is our father." And Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did." These people placed great store by being physical descendants of Abraham. But Jesus was not impressed by that. He admits that they are physical descendants of Abraham, but that's not what matters. To know whether you are a true descendant of Abraham or not, you need to ask yourself, is the family likeness there? Does your life look like Abraham's life? Do you do the works that Abraham did? Abraham received God's truth. God spoke to him, and he believed the words that God spoke. And he showed that he believed those words by obeying them. These people that Jesus was speaking to, that's recorded in John chapter 8, they claimed to be Abraham's descendants, but their actions completely denied that claim. Instead of believing the truth from God that Jesus had brought to them, they rejected it, and they demonstrated that they were rejecting it by seeking to kill the one whom God had sent. So back in Luke 19, when Jesus refers to Zacchaeus as a son of Abraham, he's saying far more than that he's one of Abraham's physical descendants. He's talking about the transformation that has taken place in the life of this man. That transformation that shows that he is truly a son of Abraham. he carries the family likeness. As Abraham received God's truth and obeyed it, so Zacchaeus has joyfully received the truth of the gospel that has been brought to him by Jesus. And the evidence for that is seen in his transformed life, where he's gone from living in waywardness and rebellion to a life of obedience that flows from love and gratitude. And the implied challenge here to Jesus' critics is, you claim to be Abraham's descendants. Do your lives show the evidence to back up that claim, as the life of Zacchaeus now does? But as we close, I just want to ask, have you truly grasped the truth of Jesus' words in verse 10? For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Perhaps you feel that you want to know this salvation that Jesus offers, but then you look at your life and you conclude that it can't be for you. You've lived so many years in rebellion against God. Perhaps you've sunk to such moral depths that there's no possibility that God could accept or forgive you. You conclude with despair that you're lost. Well, verse 10 is good news for you, because it's precisely for people like you that Jesus came. He came for lost people. People who've lived all of their lives breaking God's commandments. People who deserve only his punishment. People like Zacchaeus. By his death on the cross, Jesus took in full the punishment for sin for all who will believe on him. He secured their full forgiveness, the removal of their guilt, their acceptance with God, and their rescue from the controlling power of sin. If you will come to Jesus now and trust in him alone, regardless of what your life has been up to this point, you will receive this salvation. You will know God as your Father now, and you will have that wonderful certainty of everlasting life with him to look forward to. Amen.